Okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chaim Schmidt. This is the Kosher Scene, and tonight we are talking.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Kosher Scene. Our guest this evening is none other than Paula Scheuer, pastry chef extraordinaire, the author of The Kosher Baker, and an upcoming book on baking for the various holidays. Good evening, Paula.
Good evening, Chaim. It's great to be here. The new book is called The Holiday Kosher Baker.
Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, the book will be out in October, and I had so many ideas, even after I finished The Kosher Baker several years ago, that I knew I had another book in me. The book had started out as a Pesach dessert book, but kind of grew into a new view of Jewish holidays. So I have some really unique and creative approaches to Rosh Hashanah desserts, Hanukkah. I've got so many flavors of Hamantaschen that you never thought possible. And I had a really good time updating a lot of traditional desserts, plus including enough traditional desserts so that, you know, you'll have enough taste of your grandmother's house when you celebrate the Chagim.
Well, your first book is still one of my favorites. I'm constantly discovering new ways of doing things. And
oh, that's good to hear. Well, there's 160 recipes in it, so I don't know. I know of a few people who have baked their way through the book. But that requires very serious commitment, Chaim.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Not only that, but you also, every time I look at it, you also give me ideas on how to do things slightly differently than I've been doing them. So it's great in that sense as well.
Well, that's great. I really want to get people in the kitchen baking. I really believe that homemade desserts are so much tastier and healthier than anything you can buy in a store or bakery. And that's so much more true even for Pesach, because the packaged Pesach cookies and cakes from in the stores, they've been sitting on the shelves in my kosher store in Maryland since January. And, you know, they don't look all that appetizing to me. And very few bakeries actually do Passover desserts. So I believe that all year round you should be a home baker, but if you're not all year round, you really have to be a home baker on Passover.
Okay, so give us some ideas of what we could be doing on Passover and how.
Well, the first thing to think about when you think about Passover baking is just not to get scared off by what you cannot use and focus instead on what you can. Most bakers could probably go through their collection of recipes and find about 20% of them have very little flour in them. And if you have those kinds of recipes, you can already convert them very quickly into Pesach desserts. If you have very small amounts of flour, you could replace it with nut flours or potato starch. So that's the first thing to think about. And then I went to pastry school in Paris, France, and we made so many desserts out of nut flours, hazelnut flour, almond flour. And I remember thinking when I was in cooking school, this is amazing. I'm learning everything I need to know about Pesach desserts in cooking school in Paris. So my first Pesach after cooking school, I really focused on how I could use those nut flours and take those same French desserts that I did, you know, in cooking school, and then adjust them just ever so slightly so that they would be Pesach appropriate.
What are some of the recipes specifically for Pesach? What type of desserts?
Well, in my cookbook, which I organized according to time, but I separated out a whole section, a whole chapter just for Passover desserts. So I always think that on Pesach you need two kinds of desserts to get through the holiday. You need snacks to eat every day, something for breakfast, something to eat at tea time with your coffee, and then you need more elegant desserts to serve at the Siddurim or to serve on Shabbat during Pesach or on the Chag days. So in this chapter, in the Kosher Baker, I have a couple of cookies and candies, and then I have several elegant cakes, so that you have something for both needs during the holiday.
So you mean some of the cakes would never look like they are Passover cakes, but they might look just as elegant during the year?
Absolutely. desserts on Pesach are just good desserts. They're not good for Pesach. They just should be good, period. And if you think about gluten-free baking all year round, there are so many people who are on a gluten-free diet who can't eat flour the whole year, and all of their desserts are made out of nut flours or other alternative flours. And with great success, there's so many delicious gluten-free desserts out there. So there's no reason why Pesach desserts shouldn't be so good that you would want to eat them all year round. No one, our standards should not be lower. They should be exactly the same high standards that we have for desserts all year round.
Can you give us an example, please, of some of the desserts that would fall under that category that you put them in the Pesach section but could be done all year round and enjoyed just as much?
Well, it's also the opposite. I have recipes in the book that are in my regular sections that have little icons that show that they're Pesach desserts as well. So one, for example, is the key lime pie. I have a delicious key lime pie that has a walnut crust. It's just a delicious pie. I wanted a nut crust instead of a graham cracker crust because I just prefer that combination of nut and citrus. So I created that recipe. But it was a Pesach dessert just by design. It wasn't intended to be. It's just delicious key lime pie, which I would make for any summer barbecue, and I would serve it during Pesach.
Considering that there are, after all, certain ingredients we cannot use on Passover, and yes, I understand that when something is delicious, it does not limit me to use it only on Passover, but what are some of the strategies that you describe as to making delicious Passover desserts?
Well, you know, when you're trying to substitute for flour, there's no even one product substitution. So if you have flour in a particular recipe, I tend to use a combination of matzah cake meal and potato starch to create a flour substitute. I know some people who don't eat gebrach don't eat cake meal during most of the chag,
right.
But there's a large segment of the population that does. So if you do eat cake meal and combined with potato starch, make a really nice flour substitute. And if you don't eat the cake meal during the holiday, you could combine a nut flour with potato starch or tapioca starch. And I did notice that one of the companies had tapioca starch out this year, which is something that Kosher for Pesach caterers have been using for years. And when I was at Kosher Fest last October, I recall talking to a couple of the companies and said to them, why don't you package tapioca starch as an alternative to potato starch? I thought it would be fun to experiment with something new, and I knew that so many of the bakers for these Kosher for Pesach programs and hotels were using tapioca. So now we have it, so I'm looking forward to experimenting with that a little bit more.
You've been on our radio show a couple of times. The last time was in May 2011. Tell us.
I can't believe it was that long ago,
Chaim. Yeah.
I guess time really flies. Well, you know, you've been busy, as have I. So let's see, the last 2 years. Well, I seem to be on the book tour that never ends. I was busy when the book first came out, and I'm still busy now doing baking demonstrations all around the country and in Canada. So just in the last year alone, I've been to Toronto and Memphis and Florida and Connecticut and Boston and Philadelphia, and I'm sure I'm forgetting many other places. And it's really fun to have this opportunity to go around the country and meet other kosher bakers and have them learn from me, and also have the opportunity, you know, to hear from them what they like to bake, what they like about the book, what they want more of. You know, so many people said to me, more Pesach desserts. So I listened to them. So my next book has 45 Pesach desserts, while the kosher baker has about 20, which is great for a week-long holiday. That's fine, but I really wanted people to have lots of options, so that everybody who looked for a Pesach dessert would find exactly what they were looking for. So I've continued to do these baking demonstrations around the country. I'm actually leaving early tomorrow morning for South Florida, and I'm doing one event at the Palm Beach Synagogue Sunday morning, and then a second talk and demonstration Monday night at the Chabad in Fort Lauderdale. So I'm very excited to go to Florida. I've done so many baking demonstrations in South Florida. I've been to Miami, in several neighborhoods. I've been to Boca several times. South Florida's been a place that really seems to really want to, people bake there. I know there's lots of bakeries there. My parents live there in the winter. And I know there are kosher bakeries, but there seems to be a lot of bakers there. They really like high-quality desserts down in Florida. And then when I get back, I'm doing another baking demonstration here where I live at the Chabad of Bethesda Chevy Chase, which I was supposed to do yesterday, but we got snowed out. So I had to reschedule for next week. So next week I've got three demonstrations, and then the day after the demo I have a bridal shower for about 12 people here, which I'm looking forward to. It's always fun to teach brides, so I'm looking forward to that as well.
Now, this past November, I had the pleasure of meeting you at the Kosher Fest, where you were one of the judges, the only woman judge at the chef's competition.
Well,
wanna
I can tell you a little
it?
Bit about how that came about, because you might remember, I think you were doing the video of it, not this year,
right,
but the year before, and I was there in the audience, and I look at the panel of judges, and I looked
at the
people
competing,
and
they
were all
the judges.
Men.
The year before, I was one of the judges. This year, I was doing the video.
Okay. So I noticed that all the judges last year, and as well as the competitors, were all men. And
right.
I thought to myself, well, that doesn't make sense. I go to Kosher Fest every year. There's so many of us women in this profession. What's going on here? So I took a look and saw who the sponsors were, and I contacted Jesse Blonder from the Kosher Culinary School in Brooklyn. And I said, Jesse, you have lots of female students, don't you? And he said, of course I do. I said, well, you don't have anybody representing them or inspiring them at this culinary competition that you're sponsoring. You really need to have a woman up there. I said, it doesn't have to be me. It could be any one of my other friends and colleagues in the cookbook world or other chefs in restaurants or caterers, but you really need a woman up there for next year. So the next thing I know, I get an email inviting me to be a judge on the panel. So I got to do that. The unknown behind the story of me judging the culinary competition was at the same time that I was up in in New Jersey for the Kosher Fest, I also had to go to my kosher caterer who I was using for my twins' bar mitzvah 2 months later and do a tasting. And I figured out that the judging of the culinary competition would be right before I had to leave to go to the tasting at the caterers. So just kind of picture the scenario for a moment, that I would be judging course after course, plate after plate at the Kosher Fest, and immediately going to a caterer's facilities where I would be sitting and tasting course after course after course of dishes that we'd be eating all through Shabbos, all through an entire weekend. So it was definitely one of those days that will go down in eating history for me.
You must have done a lot of exercise the next day.
You know I did, but I will tell you, walking around Kosher Fest is quite the workout, I will tell you. And you think that you going to a kosher food show, you would eat a lot of food, but I find I don't eat so much. I find a few things that I want to taste, and it's not like I'm jumping to eat every single, potato bereka out there. They all start to look
right.
The same after a while. How many different sausages and hot dogs, although I always have my favorites, but there's so many different hot dogs there in deli, and I just can't eat too much of that stuff. So I choose very, very carefully. But what saved me that day was that at the culinary competition, the main ingredient for the competition was fresh tuna.
Mm-hmm.
Had it been chicken
tuna.
Or beef, had it been beef, I'm not sure I would have made it through the day. So instead, I was so happy to have tuna, and none of the dishes were all that heavy, but it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. I think my biggest problem is my face is a little too expressive. So if I like something, it's very clear, and if I don't like something, it's extremely obvious as well. I've never developed the poker face. So I need to probably work on that if I judge the competition again.
So what was it like to sit on the judges' table? What was it like to look at the contestants, and what was it like to taste their dishes?
Well, there was such a variety of chefs up there, and everybody tried to do something different. And what I learned from this is that I think this is something many of us know already, which is less is more. When you try to be overambitious and do too much and add too many ingredients, you end up taking away from the core ingredient and the core flavors. So there was one, I can't remember which one it was. I'm actually going to pull up the pictures right now so I have them in front of me. But I recall that there was one plate that just had too many elements that were fried. And I think that, you know, that was just too much. I always think that every plate has to have a balance of different textures and different kinds of food. And I remember one of the dishes just had too many fried things. I think one had an eggplant. Do you remember this? It was a large piece of eggplant that was fried and kind of rolled up. I thought that was a little bit old-fashioned. There was one dish that I really liked that had, it was like a fish and chips kind of plate.
Right.
And I really enjoyed that one.
That was Ari White.
Yes.
From Jensen Caterers. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I thought all the food was good. I had a chance to go to the Ladino restaurant about, I guess, a month after Kosher Fest, after having met the chef at the culinary competition where he won.
Right.
So it was fun to go to his place and try his food and meet him in a different context. I really had fun being on the panel with the other restaurant chefs, and the sausage guy was there.
Jack
was there. And it was fun to talk to him. And then I got to meet the chef of this new steak restaurant in Teaneck that I haven't been to
yet. EBC Steakhouse,
so,
yes.
Exactly. So I'm looking forward to trying
year.
That. Yes. And I enjoyed talking to him as well. So I hope to get an opportunity to do it again. I had a lot of fun. I like being able to walk around and see, you know, all the the competitors working and under those circumstances. I have to say, though, it definitely brought back memories for me having competed on the Food Network on Sweet Genius 2 years ago, or I guess it'll be 2 years this summer that we taped the show. So now when I watch these competitions, my blood starts to boil, and it's as if I'm reliving the stress of being back on the set with cameras in my face and having to work really quickly. I will say that I think I enjoy the judging more than the competing. There is definitely a level of mania that goes with competing, and it's exciting. And when you create something in a kitchen you've never been in before and you don't know the ingredients all that well, it was quite the challenge. It was definitely the hardest thing I've ever done professionally. So it's more fun to be the judge.
Right, of course. And when you mentioned about using a lot of ingredients, one of the first guests that I had on the show about almost 3 years ago told me that he's a chef, and he told me that when he graduated from CIA, from the Culinary Institute of America, he comes home, he's very, very happy, he graduated, now he's ready to work. Now his mother is having some friends over, some Italian friends. So he tells his mother, "Mama, I'm going to do the cooking." And he says he prepares this incredible Italian dish using 35 ingredients.
Wow.
His mother's friends loved it. It was a success. Wow. So when he goes for his first interview at the restaurant, he starts bragging to the potential employer about his 35-ingredient pasta dish. The guy looks at him and he says, 35 ingredient pasta dish? How much do you think I should charge for something like that? He said he couldn't understand. The guy's talking about charging. I'm talking about making art in food. He's talking about charging. Needless to say, he didn't get the job.
No, but I realized that even when I was on the Food Network, because it's television, so they're judging you really by how it looks, even though I felt that my desserts were really well-liked by the judge. They edit out a lot of, you know, what goes, you know, what they actually put in the show. But I remember how much Judge Ron Ben Israel loved everything I made and the taste of everything. And I remember bite after bite, he'd say, "Oh, this is really interesting, and this is really tasty. I love the combination of that." At the end, I made it to the second round, but then not the third round. And I think they felt that my competitor's dish was smaller and daintier, and mine was just a bigger and bolder plate of dessert. And at the end of the day, I said on TV, you know, it's still food. It may be art in one way, it may be beautiful, but it is still meant to be eaten. And I really believe that taste has to come before artistry. It's wonderful when both converge perfectly and you have this like perfect storm of texture and taste and beauty all at the same time. But really, taste has to come first. It's food. It's not a painting for the wall.
Absolutely. But as far as I'm concerned, even taste is a form of art. I recently did an event at an art gallery where we combined wine from Recanati. We also had chocolates and from World of Chantilly, and we had cheese from the Cheese Guy, European cheeses.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that the cheeses, as delicious as they were, and let's face it, cheese does not have the nicest, most beautiful shape. But the fact is that the taste of those cheeses, that to me was art. And Brent Bellman, the owner of the cheeseguy.com, he basically said that, yes, when he looks for a cheese, he looks for the artistry in taste. So
right,
food in
you
itself,
can achieve
the
depth
taste
of flavor
is definitely
and a
art.
Absolutely. I agree. But it's a science. I mean, you really have to try
it
to
is.
Get that that combination of the right kind of texture and the subtleties. And it's still being loyal. You still are dealing with these basic ingredients, you know, like the cream
mm-hmm.
and the milk and all that. But it's the way it's processed, the way it's flavored that creates something completely unique.
Absolutely.
Where is
and
this cheese guy based out of? Is he based out of New York? Does he have a shop?
He's
or
based
he
out
wholesale?
Of New York. He wholesales out of New York. And also
very
on his website. On his website. He's got incredible cheeses.
Oh, that's great. I will check that out. When I
mm-hmm.
was living in Geneva, Switzerland for 4 years, one of the highlights of Pesach for us every year was we would go over the border to the kosher butcher in France. It was just outside of Geneva. And
mm-hmm.
he had the most amazing cheeses that were kosher for Pesach from Holland, from all over France. Now, this was, you know, we're talking, this was in the late 90s, and there were all these
mm-hmm.
amazing cheeses, and it has taken years for those cheeses to end up in the United States.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
There's nothing like spreading a really good, creamy
mm-hmm.
Dutch cheese on your masa. It's delicious.
Absolutely. And Brent brings in Italian, French, and other European cheeses.
Oh, that's great. I'm definitely going to check that out.
Stuff that you normally cannot get in this country, and to me, the discipline required to bring out the taste, the combination of all those ingredients, to me, that in itself is an art.
No, that's great. That's great. I would love to, I would like to see more interesting cheeses at the kosher stores where I live in Maryland. When I've been to Pomegranate in Brooklyn, there's just a wonderful selection of cheeses, and I was just amazed to see
and
that they
do carry some of Brent's cheeses also.
Oh, that's great. Well, I'll have to bring my cooler up to New York next time I go up there.
Okay.
So I can bring some cheeses back. But getting back to Pesach desserts, I remember
mm-hmm.
last year there was one bakery in New York. I think it was the Prime Butcher Baker that was selling some Pesach desserts. And I
right.
happened to be there like a week before Pesach and had a chance to check them out. And, you know, some of them looked okay. The chocolate ones looked okay. But I just remember going in and shaking my head, thinking, you know, I think you people can do a lot better than this, you know. There are so many great ingredients now. I have a little collection in my cabinet of new products that I saw this year. Manischewitz and I think Geffen all have an almond butter that looks like peanut butter for
mm-hmm.
Pesach. And
right.
I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of a mousse and what kind of a dessert I can make out of that. I did notice something new today at my kosher store. They had macaroon dough in cans in the freezer section. Not to make French macaroons, the kinds I make for Pesach, but the
right,
old-fashioned coconut chewy
macaroons.
One. But you could bake them yourself. I thought that was kind of a cute idea. I mean, if you like those kinds of macaroons. And I know a lot of people use them as like bases of desserts for cakes and stuff. I try
right.
to really use more natural ingredients. I use whipping cream where I have to, but I'm not a big fan of using, you know, using the processed cookies for Pesach and then turning that into another dessert. I think there's enough to work with fruit and chocolate and eggs that you can create really wonderful recipes. Just this week, I developed a wonderful Pesach dessert for the Whisk magazine that's in Ami. It's the insert in Ami magazine.
Right.
I write for them. I have a column with them almost every month. I usually focus on the holidays. And what I created for them this year for the holiday was a chocolate chip sponge cake jelly roll, but inside of it was chocolate mousse. So you had this chocolate
Ooh.
Chip dough, chocolate mousse inside, and I served it in a mango sauce. And it was
wow.
just beautiful. And that, I think, is probably coming up maybe next week. I have to check with them, find the exact date of that. Hopefully we'll have
mm-hmm.
something on my website about it. And then the other recipes I just created this year, I write for the Kosher Scoop blog. And I wanted to do something different for them that I hadn't done before. And I ended up creating two different bar cookies for Pesach that are completely, you know, gluten-free, no cake meal. One of them is like a granola bar. So it's a nut-based dough with lots of dried fruit and nuts inside that you can customize however you like. And another one I did with a pistachio dough and chocolate. So it's great to have great snack food for Pesach. So it was a lot of fun. I had in my mind for a long time to create a granola bar ever since I created Passover granola out of whole wheat farfel 2 years ago. And that was one of my most popular blog postings ever. Now, I have lots of recipes in addition to my book on my website, which is paulaspastry.com. And for all these different columns that I write, I always have lots of other recipes there too. So there's other new Pesach recipes of mine out in the world. And also coming up on the 18th and 19th of March, right before the holiday, I'm going to be appearing in Washington, D.C. markets on two different television shows. And that'll be on my Facebook page. I'll put those up probably this week once I get the exact times of when the shows are going to be airing. So I'm looking forward to teaching the world more Pesach desserts and showing them that Passover desserts are not just chewy macaroons out of a can.
So tell me, how does one get in touch with you about your demos?
So if somebody wants to hire me for a demonstration, and I'm actually starting to book demonstrations for next year with the new book coming out, which is The Holiday Kosher Baker by Sterling Press, out in October, people can reach me through my website, which is paulaspastry.com, but my email is pshoyer@hotmail.com, and that's a good way to reach me. But my website has stories and my blog, and food and dessert recipes. I do create lots of great food recipes, and there are lots of desserts there too. But the book is still available at Amazon or Barnes & Noble or lots of Judaica stores all around the country. And the Pesach section has, you know, a lot of great desserts, including my famous chocolate mousse meringue layer cake, which is the greatest combination of cream and crunch you could ever want. And I've got some biscotti and some other wonderful cookies in there. And it's a great gift. It's a great gift if you're going to somebody's house for Seder for Pesach. It's a great gift to bring because your host will be able to make desserts out of it for Pesach and all year round.
Now, if I were to be a guest at your Sedorim, what would be the desserts that you would make this year?
This year I'm actually going to be in Israel for Pesach, so I got the Get Out of Pesach free card this year. But let's see what I made last year. Well, this year I would probably make that chocolate mousse jelly roll that I just invented for Whisk. It was so fresh and so delicious. If I wasn't making that chocolate mousse cake, I'd make my chocolate mousse meringue layer cake. But one of my most, you know, popular Pesach desserts is my lemon layer cake. The cake is based on my grandmother's lemon sponge cake, made into a layer cake and filled with lemon mousse made out of lemon curd and whipping cream. And it's just a really fresh, delicious cake that I love to serve on the holiday. But you always have to have cookies because sometimes there are people who just want one thing. So I guess I would probably make my chocolate brownie cookies because those are so easy to make for our crowd. I did those on television in D.C. last year, and I demonstrated the entire recipe in about 75 seconds. So it's definitely a quick
wow.
Yeah. Well, they don't give you a lot of time on local TV.
And if you have a house full of kids who just want something sweet and something fast, what would you recommend on Pesach?
I would say I would go for the chocolate brownie cookies because those are really easy. But my new my bar cookies that are on the Kosher Scoop blog, which will hopefully be up next week, those are great because you make a whole pan of them and then you cut them into pieces. You don't have to shape the cookies like you have to do for my other cookies. My other cookies, you have to slice them or you have to do drop each cookie on the cookie sheet. Bar cookies are so easy to make for crowds, and they're easy to double and triple if you need to. So I would go for that. But, yeah, look for the next book, The Holiday Kosher Baker, next Pesach, because I have carrot cakes and crumb cakes and everything for breakfast time to tea time to fancy, fancy. So anything you'd be looking for is definitely going to be there. Just like I modeled, just like this, the Kosher Bakers has easy desserts and multiple-step desserts, I have all different levels of baking in the other book.
Okay. As always, it's a pleasure talking to you. We're just about out of time, and there are still
well,
so many questions
I
wanted
to ask.
Well,
to be there and talk about my I call it my fifth baby, the Kosher Baker. So thank you so much for having me back on your show, and I wish you a delicious and sweet Pesach.
Chag Kasher v'sameach. Thank you very
thank
much
you.
For being on our show. As always, we love talking to you.
Take care, Chaim. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, and good night, one and all. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Kosher Scene. Please tune us in next week, Wednesday evening, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you very much. Good night, one and all.